Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist, and tonight is Thursday, March 5th, 2009. It's 6 o'clock Eastern Time, so if you're listening now, you're listening live, and we'd like to welcome you to the show. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Laura. This is Kate Hensler. I am a developmental interventionist with 0 to 3-year-old children with the First Steps program here in Louisville, Kentucky.
All right, and tonight we are going to be talking about receptive language disorders in children or receptive language delays, and would love to have any questions that you want to call us and talk about, and our call-in number is 1-718-766-4332, and again, we're talking primarily about understanding language tonight and what it looks like when your child is having difficulty with receptive language, or it can also be called auditory comprehension, or sometimes in older children it's called auditory processing disorder. But all of those things really are the same label for young children, that is children under about 3 or 4. And it's so important to think about receptive language because so many parents will notice if their child isn't talking, but sometimes parents and even professionals miss when a child is not understanding language. Don't you find that to be true in your practice, Kate?
Very, very, very much so, and I think that it's even, you know, we all want our children to be perfect, but it's even more difficult beyond not necessarily recognizing that there's an issue with comprehension. Parents have a harder time kind of accepting that, even when it is kind of specifically pointed out, because it means, gee, maybe they don't really understand everything that they should, and maybe there's some cognitive component there. But, yes, very common that parents kind of skip right onto what does he say or what doesn't he say and kind of overlook the, well, what does he understand and what doesn't he understand part of it.
Right, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that parents sometimes almost out of denial overlook that because it does in their minds make them wonder, is my kid smart?
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't he understand? Does that mean he's, for lack of a better word, retarded? What does this mean when my child is having difficulty linking meanings to words? So that's what we're going to talk about tonight, and we're really talking about the outline from my DVD series, Teach Me to Listen and Obey, and tonight we're talking about part one of that series, which goes to the developmental level of about 24 months, and one thing I really want to stress is your child can be much older than his second birthday or that chronological age and still developmentally be back at that age level. So don't let the age levels freak you out. You really need to look at his developmental level and use those months or age ranges just as a general guide to help you measure progress and help you track his development and not get too hung up on those age ranges, because sometimes people will buy a DVD and I'll get a letter back and they'll say, you know, my child's much older than this. The kids you had in your DVDs look like babies. And then, you know, we'll chat via email and I'll say, well, tell me about your child, and, you know, it might turn out that the child is 3 or 4, but they're still not following basic commands. And one thing that I try to talk to parents about is it doesn't matter how old your child is until he gets these foundational concepts. These are the things you need to work on. These are the strategies that we're going to talk about tonight that are useful for that, no matter what chronological age your kid is.
And again, like I said, that can be tough, but if they don't have those foundation pieces, you know, it's kind of a stumbling block for moving on. So got to start at the beginning, right, Miss Laura?
Exactly. So I did want to put that little disclaimer in there. If you have a child who's 3.5 and maybe has a diagnosis of autism, but he's still not following basic commands, these are the strategies you need, even though if it's seems like we might be talking more about babies or toddlers, and you think, oh, no, my child's older than that. Developmentally, he might still be in that phase, so we want to be sure to think about the developmental level that your child is in. So, again, let's talk about As far as receptive language goes or understanding, let's talk about some of the red flags that we want to look at that would let you know that a child might have a receptive language disorder or delay. First of all, one of those signs might be ignoring spoken language, such as not responding to his name or not responding to requests. This happens so much where parents just think that he's somehow ignoring them on purpose and that he's choosing not to attend when you call his name from across the room. And sometimes that is the case, but especially if you have a child who's not talking, who's not participating in little games with you or little routines, he may not be purposefully choosing not to tune in when you call him or when you try to tell him something. It could be that he's cognitively, again, not there yet. He's just not able to comprehend that you want him to look at you and pay attention to what you're saying at that time. I see that a lot, especially kids with who have diagnoses or go on to have a diagnosis of autism. They really don't clue in when you're talking to them from across the room. Kate, do you want to expound on that any?
Well, I hear parents say he acts like he doesn't hear.
Right.
Then again, you know, if his favorite show, say SpongeBob, comes on in the other room, barely audible, the child runs into the other room, and you think, well, he heard that, didn't he?
Yeah, it's not hearing. Yeah.
Yeah, I do think that kids who have difficulty understanding what's said to them learn to tune out pretty well because it's overwhelming to them. It's just blah, 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 blah. And if you think, you know, say you were in a foreign country and they were speaking a foreign language and you only knew 10 words, you know, basic words, and people started blah, 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 on and on and on in Spanish, I think my first reaction would be to say, whatever, can't understand that, and learn to not pay any attention to it. So I guess that's all I really want to say about it.
Yeah, and I think that does happen a lot. And, you know, the example I give to parents is, like, you know, when you watch the Charlie Brown cartoons and you hear the Charlie Brown teacher, wah, 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 you know the lady is talking, and you know that she's probably talking to students in the class, but you really have no clue what she's saying. So, again, that's kind of how I try to think about it with a kid with a receptive language disorder is they know somebody might be talking, but they really don't know what those things mean. And a foreign language example is a great example for that. And, you know, when I took Spanish in college, and again, might pick out a word every now and again, but to follow a conversational speaker, again, my response, like you just said, would be to turn around and kind of walk away. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm embarrassed.
I missed that.
Uh-huh.
No. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that's the first sign or symptom of a receptive language problem. The second one would be difficulty following directions, especially if the command is new or that you're not pointing or showing him what you're talking about. And this happens a lot where parents will just assume because he's following very simple directions, and I think we talk about this every week on the show, when a parent might assume if they're able to do something really simple like throw their diaper in the trash when they've done it 150 times, then a parent automatically assumes that they understand everything else. And so they don't really think about difficulty following directions as a real problem, as a receptive language problem. They choose to think about it as a behavioral issue rather than he really doesn't get what you're saying there. He doesn't understand what you just told them to do. So difficulty following verbal directions would be a sign of a receptive language disorder. The next one is one that people miss all the time. They just don't understand why a kid is doing it. But it would be children who repeat a question rather than answering it. And, oh, gosh, don't we see that a lot with the kids that we see on our caseloads, Kate?
Yes, a lot, a lot.
Yeah. We'll say, what's the dog say? Dog say! What's the duck say? Duck say! You want to have some cookies? Have cookies! You know, and again, have cookies there would be probably more of an appropriate response than when you're imitating dog say, duck say, or, any other example for a question. But again, that might tell you that they're not processing the question. They don't understand that they expect you, an answer from you, or they expect you to answer the question rather than just repeat what they've said. Now, some children in that very brief developmental phase, I think like 18 to 24 months it is, I think on your test that you use all the time, Kate, on the HELP, on the Hawaii Early Learning Profile, isn't it 19 to 21 months where they say that children frequently imitate or parrot everything that they've heard?
Right.
Yeah. And I think I would probably say that that lasts, you know, 18 to 24 months. And you, granted, we do want children to imitate. We do want children to repeat because that's how they learn to talk. However, when you have a child that's, say, 2.5, and you say, what's your name? And he says, your name. Or you say, how old are you? And he blurts out his name. You know, that repeating a question or answering a question incorrectly or off target really means that he's not processing the question. Usually, if a child understands the question but just doesn't know the answer, I found that they just kind of stare back at you or and don't answer rather than saying something completely off topic. What do you think about that, Kate? Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, unless, you know, they have other issues like you just described, typically they just kind of look at you and think, you know, they don't necessarily repeat back the question.
Right. And sometimes the silence is also an indication that they don't understand. But I think really repeating a question like that without, now sometimes the child will repeat a question, you know, I'll ask him, do you want to play cars? And he'll say, play cars, but then he's looking around for the cars. And so I know, oh boy, he's understood that. But the kid who just smiles back at you and says just what you said to him in your same tone of voice probably didn't process the question correctly. And again, that's a sign of a receptive language disorder. And again, especially if you have a child that's older than about 2.5, that's a real big red flag. If you have a 3 or 4 year old that really repeats rather than answering, it's usually not because he doesn't necessarily know the answer. Well, it is because of that, but the big problem is that he's not understood the question. He's not processed the question correctly. All right. A big sign of a receptive language disorder, too, is that most of his child's speech is jargon, and I think even speech pathologists aren't really trained to look at jargon as a receptive language problem. You know, and again, I know I've talked about this on the show a lot, but it's so profound to me that jargon or just using lots of unintelligible phrase length things, and I've said before on this show, too, I am not a good modeler of jargon. I can't really do jargon like some kids can really do it. When I do it, I sound stupid, so I'm not even going to try. You're not a great jargon person either, are you, Kate?
No. No. I'll say this. Parents, I've had a lot of parents say, you know, he has his own language. It sounds like he's speaking Chinese.
Yeah.
And I know what they mean because it's like, well, you might think it was words, but you can't really make out any words. It's like they have the idea that they're supposed to put some sounds together, you know, some consonant vowel combinations, and it's words, but really it's not words. It's just sounds that they're stringing together to sound like they're saying something.
Right, and they know. I mean, they know that mommy and daddy talk in these long sentences, and brothers and sisters do, and sometimes even their friends do, and so they know that that's kind of what's expected of them. But the theory that jargon is mostly representative when a child has receptive language delays really kind of makes sense to me when I think about it. It's that they know the length is there. They just don't have anything to fill it up with. They don't have the vocabulary to be able to not only say words but combine words. So they do the whole gobbledygook thing. And I do have a ton of parents that say, oh, if I only knew German, if I only knew Spanish, you know, whatever language it happens to be. Chinese is a frequent one around here. People say that all the time.
Ladies, we have a caller.
Okay. Hi, caller.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm trying to corral my son at the present moment. He's running around.
We're so used to that. Go ahead. Just tell us who you are and what your question is.
I think my question is probably similar to a lot of people. I'm really glad that you're on here. My son can, like, read words and write and do alphabets and memorize and everything, but he doesn't ask or answer real questions. Like, it's so I don't know if it's a hearing thing or not, because he seems to hear everything, but he doesn't, he won't ask where we're going, but he can ask for milk. You know what I mean?
He asks for milk.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he uses the same robotic phrase, may I have some milk, please? May I have some cookies, please? May I have some water, please? But that's kind of what we taught him to say, and that's what he uses for what he needs, but he'll never ask, what is that? Where are we going? You know, he doesn't ask, he doesn't describe things.
He's almost three. You know, asking questions like that really typically comes in around that latter half of two and closer to that third birthday. So he might be right on the verge of that. You said he's talking in long sentences, though?
He can, yeah. But it's usually just stuff that he uses every day, stuff that's useful to him, you know,
right.
Like asking for something. Every now and again he'll say, where is Daddy? He'll go to the door, but, you know, he doesn't. And he won't answer questions either. That's the other thing that concerns me. Like, he doesn't answer yes or no questions. He doesn't, like, if people ask him what his name is, he doesn't respond. But if I point to a picture in a book, he can tell me it's a dog, you know.
Right, right. You know, in understanding your name and being able to respond to your name, you know, and say that and give your age, and those little questions really do come in on the test that I use at 33 to 36 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then on another test that I've recently looked at, it says after age 3. So,
okay.
Again, it could be that he's right on the verge of that. What you need to do to help him practice those kinds of things, if he seems to need you to teach him those things, like you've said, so many of the phrases that he uses are things that you've taught him, you really just are going to have to know that that's his learning style and
yes.
Really work with him on those things and give him some things to say. You know,
but does that mean that he's language delayed because he's so old and, like, other kids are just having conversations and he's not,
you know
but yet he can read and write. That doesn't make sense to his doctor, so.
Yeah. You know, early reading and writing sometimes is in the literature is called hyperlexia, and what that means is just that there's an that skill has come in really early. When you read about that in the literature, it is associated usually with autism.
Okay.
Has the doctor talked to you about that before?
Yeah, he has an appointment with the developmental specialist next week, and
yeah.
So I guess he's going to be tested for all those things because, I mean, he was doing all that kind of stuff really, really early. But yet, just, you know, he has a big vocabulary, but just doesn't use it for
right.
talking to human beings.
Yeah, you know, and that really is indicative of the social communication difficulty, which, and I'm so glad that you're having him evaluated. And, you know, they will be able to look at him in that assessment and tell you exactly what he is doing and what he isn't doing, and you will be able to get kind of age equivalencies where he's falling. But more importantly than that, they'll help you get him in therapy so that they can address his real specific needs and challenges. And it's so hard for Kate and me to just talk about specific children, you know, when a mom mm-hmm. would call in or say, this is what he's doing, because we haven't seen him. You know, we don't really know what he's like. So it would be really hard for us to say, yes, he has a receptive language disorder, or no, he doesn't. But not answering questions and not really processing conversations usually does mean that there's some difficulty with
right.
that. So that's something you're going to want to talk to them about when you take him for that appointment.
Right. Like, I think my family's mostly concerned with the fact that, well, he can't be autistic because he looks people in the eye and he's very present. You know, he's very affectionate, but he's, you know, that the language thing, the question thing, the conversation thing is not there.
Well, now you can have a language problem, a receptive language problem or auditory processing problem without being autistic. So
okay.
that can be part of it too. You know, I mean, it could just be that this is, he's got the social piece, you know, that's coming along. And
yes.
they may find that he's not on the spectrum, that he does not have all of those qualities that would make them give him a diagnosis like autism, but that just processing and understanding language is a real challenge for him. And then what will happen is they'll have you do some speech therapy, and the speech pathologist will not only work with him, but she's going to work with you to tell you how to work on those things at home.
Okay. I actually printed out your blog about teaching your toddler to answer questions, and that was really, really good.
Oh,
so,
good.
Thank you guys for that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. There's tons of stuff in the expressive language category on the website at teachmetotalk.com. And then check out the things, too, that, I'm not sure if there's a category that says pragmatic, P-R-A-G-M-A-T-I-C, but listen or search for that on the website that and use that specific term, pragmatics, P-R-A-G-M-A-T-I-C-S, because that will also pull up those articles that pertain to that. And, again, that's going to be helping him learn to use all those words that he has in a real specific, functional, day-to-day way. And
okay.
You're so smart to go ahead and get him evaluated now while he's still so young. And I know it's hard. I know it's hard, but hang in there. You're doing the right thing.
It is so hard because I'm actually like a teacher. So for my son not to be doing certain things, it's just kind of crazy. I don't know.
I know.
It just feels like I need to get a handle on it. So, yeah, I appreciate
like
you guys. I won't take up all your time.
Great stuff.
Okay.
So.
Thanks for your question. Bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Okay.
That was a good call, wasn't it? I mean, interesting.
That was a good call. And, boy, what a hard call to make and,
mm-hmm.
and saying. And these are some of the things that we say on the show and that we talk about and that we see all the time. A child really has a large vocabulary, and he has these skills. And then people come along and say, well, he can't be autistic because he looks at you and he's social, but yet that mom is so smart to know there's still a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good for us her to call on a receptive language show, too, because I think she's pinpointed the issue. He's not really processing what's going on around him enough to be able to participate in a conversation like that. And isn't it hard when we have a caller like that, Kate, because we can't see the kid?
Right.
Yeah. And
although she did a good job of, I mean, she's obviously paid, the teacher in her has not missed much with her son, which is great. So she's paid a lot of attention to, well, what are his strengths and where do I see he's different from my friend's kids and, you know, other kids I've worked with perhaps. So she was pretty intuitive about, And he's interesting because those huge strengths, writing and reading and, you know, so clearly that's unbelievably impressive for a child who's not quite three. On the other hand, how can a child who has those strengths have those weaknesses on responding? And you made a good point about maybe it's a processing thing, maybe it's a spectrum thing, and that's for her particular experts to try and help her figure out. But
right, and you know you can use those strengths with children. I think last week after you hung up on the show that never ended, that went on and on, Annette asked some questions about hyperlexia, and again, that means that a child has reading or writing abilities. Well, actually, I guess it would be hyperlexia would be reading. I guess early writing, I don't know if that's called hypergraphia. I don't know. I'm just making a guess, but you know, those kinds of skills, while they are strengths, aren't typical, and it is interesting to have a child that's missing some very basic foundational skills under that, but you can use those strengths to develop treatment programs that really help those children learn. And that's the comment that I made on the end of the last show when Annette asked me that, is she said, you know, is early reading bad? And, you know, my answer to that can't be, yes, early reading is bad, because what are you going to do? Say, don't read it. Don't read it. You're not supposed to read it. You know, no, you're not going to do that.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, and I hate saying to parents it's a red flag, but
don't you always feel that way? I mean, when you're working
always
with a child, because, well, let's say this. If it's a child who has identified delays and they're on our caseload and we're seeing them as a therapist, then there are those big gaps. And it's hard not to associate the hyperlexia or even the hyperfocus on colors and numbers, letters, all those things, because it is associated with autism. And more often than not, the kids I see, they also have other things that are associated with autism. You know, sensory issues and on. So it's hard not to be concerned about it, and yet parents are oftentimes understandably quite proud because, in a way, it's smart. You know, it is smart, but it's,
yeah.
out of sequence. You know, that's
right.
The part that we're thinking, yeah, but we have some big gaps to fill here.
And I think it is hard for parents. It's even harder for grandparents, because grandparents are the ones that are so darn proud of those pre-academic skills like that. And she's, you know, she that caller did say, you know, the grandparents say you can't be autistic. So I hope that she gets the help that she needs and gets that assessment. Maybe she'll call back and let us know how he's doing from time to time.
I want to say this quick, Laura. Quickly, that whole autism diagnosis, even here in this not such a huge city of Louisville, there's just a whole lot of variability between what one professional might call something autism, or, you know, on the spectrum, meaning on the autistic spectrum. Another professional, and they have the same credentials, will totally negate that and say, no, he couldn't be autistic because he makes eye contact, or because. I just think the truth is it's such a huge spectrum that, I mean, I tend to think for myself, because it helps me kind of think, well, what can I look forward to? What can I expect to be issues for this child? How can I best meet his needs, you know, on the floor in their living room? That it is spectrum behavior to me. I may or may not say that to a parent, because they may or may not be ready to hear it. And it's very confusing for parents, because they may go one place and hear their child is on the spectrum, and then they go another place and they say he couldn't possibly be on the spectrum. So just a little cautionary note.
Right. And, you know, and I do have, and I think you've had this happen, Kate, but I've really had it happen and kind of come back full circle for me. It's children that I saw when they were two, and I had real concerns about autism and shared that with parents. And, you know, sometimes I wasn't even the person that initiated that on the team, or the parent might have said, gosh, do you think he's autistic? And I would say, yeah, he's got these red flags. I'm pretty concerned about that. Let's follow through with an evaluation. And then they go for the assessment. The expert, whoever that might be, at that place says, no autism. Parents breathe a big sigh of relief. They still might go ahead and get speech through preschool. They still do preschool. And then lo and behold, what happens in kindergarten? The teacher pulls those parents in for the conference and says, your child has autism. I believe that your child is autistic. And they are totally blown away, because someone at two told them, no, he can't possibly be autistic. But then those delays have continued, and those issues have continued. And sometimes those kids have kind of gotten quirkier and quirkier. And even though they've made progress in some areas, especially if they've stayed in speech, they might have pretty functional language skills at that point. But again, the kindergarten teacher is looking at that one kid compared to the other 25 kids in her class, and she says, oh, yeah, ding, ding, ding.
Right.
We've
or
got
what
a diagnosis
quirky
here.
At two is very quirky at five. You know,
yeah,
they
hand
really
flapping. Yeah, hand flapping at two, you can blow that off. It's a toddler thing. Hand flapping at five, that's when the kids are looking at you saying, what is wrong? You know, even your peers at that point are pointing out those stereotypical behaviors. So that's happened a lot with me in the last couple of years, where I've really been concerned about a kid at two, and we've worked really hard, but parents have taken him to XYZ doctor or team, and someone has definitively told a parent no, and the parent breathes a big sigh of relief, comes back to her team and says, whoo, that doctor says no autism. All of us sitting around that table, that's a very uncomfortable 30 seconds before anybody else jumps in and says, okay, let's just kind of work on his deficits and talk about what he has and see this through. And then, lo and behold, you know, I'll see him at Target over Christmas, or I'll get a card or something, or hear, you know, from the grandmother, or see a friend, and they'll say, oh, yeah, he did go ahead and get that. Remember that autism stuff you were talking about it too? They have decided that's what's wrong with him. So that was a very good point that you made, to really be cautious about that and not just totally dismiss those concerns.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing I'd like to make note of is that, and I think parents, I've had a lot of parents think of autism as, again, very cut and dry, very black and white, and I always kind of like to remind parents that kids on the spectrum function at all different levels, and some kids, like that little boy, even if he were to go on and get a diagnosis of autism, clearly he does have some huge strengths, and so, you know, he is, I shouldn't use him as an example, let's say another child who had those hyperlexic strengths, you know, obviously his prognosis, his ability to go on and function well through school and even beyond is going to be much greater than the child who gets the autism diagnosis who's nonverbal, who doesn't have any social skills, who, I mean, so, and I think parents a lot of times do have that, he's not, and then they think it's cool, nothing's really wrong, and really there's still, they still, whether there's a diagnosis or not, the issues are there or they're not, so.
Right, and it really doesn't matter about getting the diagnosis, really. I mean, I have to tell myself this all the time. We need to be addressing what their deficits are and addressing what the issues are, whether or not we call it autism or not. And to me, it really doesn't matter whether a kid has that diagnosis or not. I'm still going to treat the receptive language problem, the expressive language problem, the social issues. You know, and it could be your other point was sometimes parents just aren't ready to hear that when their kids are two or three.
Right.
But by the time it's progressed and they're five or six and they're still having these issues, or seven or eight, and every darn year the teacher brings up the same stuff in the conference, by then sometimes the parents are ready to say, well, what is it? Give me a name. Give me a label. Or they've just gotten so worn down by that point that they're really ready to accept it, whereas they aren't ready when they're too. Yeah.
But I do think a lot of people have the most extreme image of autism in their heads. You know, the most extreme.
That a kid never looks at anybody, that they never
smile,
that they're over in the corner. Yeah, over in the corner rocking. You know, they can't, they don't think it could be their darling granddaughter who is quite beautiful and who does occasionally smile and who sings all the words to her favorite TV show. You know, somehow they don't equate that that little girl could be.
Because the most extreme image is what is most, you know, publicized or common, and so that's what people think. And, you know, Laura, we always slip into the autism discussion, and I think that's because it's so darn prevalent now. You know, it is so common that we see, of course, we work with kids who are language delayed, and I guess the current number is 1 in 150 kids gets a diagnosis of autism, and if you're talking a son, your boy, then the odds are 1 in 100. So when you whittle that down to those children who are language delayed, that means a pretty high percentage of the kids we see may be on the spectrum. So we never start out to say we're talking about autism, but it always kind of goes there.
You know, and I said this to the mom, but a child can have a receptive language problem without being autistic.
Right.
So let's get back to our...
And the sorts of things she describes would describe that as well.
Absolutely. And,
yeah,
you know, and again, we are not seeing that child, so I'm so glad she's going to take him for an evaluation. And if you have a child that you're listening, that you're thinking about right now as you're listening, please, please don't let this show or the website or even the DVD substitute for getting a professional, a team of professionals, several professionals, whoever you have to take them to evaluate a child before your concerns are met. You know, go ahead and pursue. You know, and I get emails all the time from people who've been through two or three speech pathologists before they find a good fit and before they find someone who that they think really has a good read on their child, not only with what's going on, but how to treat it and how to make it better. So, but the first step is getting a child evaluated. And if a child is under three, every state in the United States has an early intervention program. You can find out information about your state's program by going to Google or Yahoo or any other search engine and typing in your state name plus the phrase early intervention, and you'll get some sites that pop up about that. It's federal law that every state have a program in place to address children birth to three who might be suspected of having a developmental issue, and the evaluation process is always free. In many states, the therapy is free as well, or it's on a sliding scale based on your family income. But if you are listening right now and have a child that you suspect has a language problem, please, please, please work with him at home, but go ahead and get some professionals to help you evaluate your child as well. and more importantly, teach you what you can do that would fit your child's specific situation.
And a cautionary note on that, Kentucky's pretty good about having a lot of available therapists, but other states are not quite as aggressive, and so there can be waiting lists, and there can be quite a gap between calling, getting the assessment, and maybe getting a therapist on board. So if you're kind of on the fence and thinking, maybe I have a problem, or maybe I'm concerned, maybe I'm not, go ahead and call, get the assessment, because you may have, I've heard of up to 6 months of waiting. Now, we don't do that in Kentucky, thankfully, but this is one area where Kentucky is pretty progressive, I'm proud to say. We have a good early intervention program here in Kentucky. So, you know, just so you know, it's not an automatic thing in every state. So if you're on the fence, do it, and then you can always change your mind and choose not to do it down the road. But there may be a waiting list someplace.
Yeah, and if your child doesn't qualify or doesn't have, you know, and remember that your child has to be not just a little bit behind, but a lot behind to qualify for these state programs. So if your child, if they say that your child qualifies, please, please, please know that he or she really, really does need the help. And even if they don't say that your child is eligible, don't necessarily take that as everything is moving along just great. There has to be, again, a pretty big gap, a pretty big delay to qualify for the early intervention program for a child under 3, and especially over 3 for a preschool child. So this may be, your child may be in a situation where he doesn't quite qualify for the program, but he still needs some help. And at that point, you need to find a private person, a person in private practice, or just get some advice of how best to treat the issues that are going on.
Or go to Laura's website and get some information and consider the DVDs, because they are really, really good about how to work on language issues in young kids.
Well,
I'll put
that.
I'll put you in there, Laura. No, I'm serious. I mean, just like that mom said, she'd already been to your website and gotten information there. And pretty much all the big topics you've written about, you've responded to lots of emails of real people who have real issues, you know, concerns with their kids. And then your DVDs not only talk about it, but show it. So I think that's really helpful for people to see.
Well, thank you very much. And that's the thing, too. And a lot of early intervention programs have ordered the DVDs throughout the country because they lend those to parents whose children don't qualify for the program but still have that delay. And so they offer that to parents. I think parents have to give it back. But that certainly
would
be.
So now you're the replacement therapist by DVD?
Yeah, in Minnesota and Wisconsin
and
all these other states. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Okay, all right, let's get back to the characteristics of a receptive language disorder. We've already talked about ignoring spoken language, difficulty following directions, repeating a question rather than answering it, answering a question incorrectly or off topic. For example, if you say, "What's your name?" he might just nod his head yes. You know, you would think, "Oh, that's strange," you know, and that means he didn't process the question. Most of his speech would be jargon or jabbering or using those mostly unintelligible sentence lengths, utterances to talk even after he's 2. And again, now let me, I don't think we said this, there is a window when jargon is age appropriate when a kid is under 2, but really by 2 you want a lot of that jargon going away and being replaced by real words and real words and phrases. Okay, and another symptom of a receptive language disorder would be that your child uses the same words and phrases without adding many new ones. And I do think that mom said that too, didn't she, that her child uses kind of the same little pat phrases to ask for things.
Which is, you called it robotic, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I want more milk, please. I want more whatever, please. And she said that's what they, may I have more milk, please, I guess it was. They had taught him that phrase, and he used it appropriately for a variety of things, but there was no kind of variety in his speech, it sounded like, when he was requesting things. It was always that phrase.
Right, and that's a big red flag, too. I have a mom right now that's really stuck on, this is so off topic, but I'm just going to go ahead since I opened it. She's really stuck on having her little girl say, "May I have more whatever, please?" And, you know, "may I" is such a nice, polite way to ask for things, but toddlers really don't use that. And the "may," that's an auxiliary verb or copula or whatever that term is, and that really doesn't show up in language until typical language development until after a child's three. And so I have this little language delayed girl whose mom is towering over her saying, "You have to say, may I have more milk, please?" And I think, good Lord, let's just go with milk, please.
Yeah.
How about that? Forget this, may
really
I?
With more milk, please. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So sometimes it's crazy what we do with those things. And that's so funny. If that little boy had not been able to learn those really long phrases, his language delay might show up even a little earlier. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those kids that can really imitate that whole long stuff, sometimes they're not well served with that great imitative ability, because then people miss it. People miss mm-hmm. that there's a real gap going on there.
They hear that phrase and they give them credit for language really beyond where he is, because that phrase sounds really good, but they're not really listening.
Yeah, it sounds old.
For that variety. Yeah, it does. I mean, again, that's something parents and grandparents and, hey, therapists like to, I'd love for a child to say, may I play with more choo-choos, please? But I haven't heard that recently, so.
Well, you can come with me this next week. Hear this little girl try her best to try to say it. And this is a sweet family. I've worked with them before. I worked with her brother when he's five now, and he has totally different issues than her. But it's just funny how we kind of get stuck in that. We go into mom mode with the whole behavioral politeness slant, and then we kind of miss the boat on, oh, no, she can't say it, or certainly she doesn't understand this. So anyway, all right, that's that. Okay. On Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1, there are some milestones, the big milestones that children should achieve with receptive language between birth and I think I go to 42 months, which would be 3.5. And I want to just run through those pretty quickly tonight. And Kate, you can jump in whenever you want to stop me and talk about some of these things. But these are just the big milestones. And I put this together from looking at lots of tests, not just one particular tool. And so it would be just kind of some real general guidelines that a child should be able to do by this certain age range. So between 9 to 15 months, your toddler should be able to participate in social games like peekaboo, patty cake, so big. Should understand words related to familiar routines and people, like where's mama, and the baby should look at mama, or tell me bye-bye, and the baby should be able to wave bye-bye, something like give me a kiss. The baby should be able to lean forward and, you know, see mommy's lips puckered out, you know, and try to give mama a kiss. The baby should be responding to his or her name consistently, and that would mean when you call them from across the room that they turn their little heads and pay attention. And toddlers by that age should also understand no. That doesn't mean that they necessarily obey it every time, but if you have a toddler, and I remember with my own children, sometimes when they heard no, they would start to cry, and I would think that means they understand. They knew there was a limit there. So if you have a child who's older than 15 months and not doing those things, these are very generous guidelines. So if you have a kid, again, that's 2.5 and not responding to his name consistently, not consistently evidencing that he understands no by either stopping what he's doing or at least pausing or crying or protesting in some way to understand, to indicate that he's understood, that's a big red flag. Do you want to talk about any of those, Kate?
No, I would just, put in there that they pause, they may look at you, they may even get a little twinkle in their eye like, no, but I'm going to try and do it. But you do need to be able to kind of see some reaction to, oh, mommy's giving me the no word again. So that's it.
Okay. 15 to 21 months. Children by this age should be able to follow many different one-step commands and daily routines at home and in play. And again, this would be like, bring mommy a book, or go get the ball, or put your cup, or give me your cup, put your cup in the sink, go get your shoes. Those would be, throw the diaper away. Those would be really simple one-step directions that he's heard over and over and over again. And if your child's not doing that, I always say to parents, make sure that you're giving him those opportunities and make sure that you're trying to work on those little commands and daily routines. Excuse me. Otherwise, he doesn't have the opportunity to demonstrate that he knows those things. And I think so many times when a parent says to me, well, I don't know if he can do those things, I always think, well, he probably can't, because if he could, surely you would have figured that out by now. Don't you think?
Yes. That's not always, but more often than not, that is. They sometimes will say, I don't know, or I don't really ask him to do those. And kind of conversely from what you've said, well, I see usually they don't ask them because they know they're not going to get the desired response. So,
right. They haven't indicated that they understood things up until that point. So just subconsciously the parents have.
Don't really push it because they know they don't really get the desired response. So then they say, well, I don't know if he could. And normally by time the child's that age, parents are saying all day long, you know, come here, sit down, get the book, let's go bye-bye, get your shoes. You know, it's all day long you're asking him to do little things, and kids
right.
do it, you know.
Right. You know, and you've used this example before. Sometimes I really will be in a home with a two-year-old, two-and-a-half-year-old, and I'm asking them to do those things, and they're not doing it, but they might have a little brother or sister who run to do that, you know, who might barely be, you know, one, and they're trying to follow those little commands. And that's always interesting for the parent to see.
Right. And I've had cases where I almost felt, you know, it hurt my feelings almost to see the baby doing it and not the two-year-old or the two-and-a-half-year-old, because then it's obvious, which, I mean, you know, parents need to see where the deficits are so that they know where they need to, you know, focus their attention. But it can be kind of uncomfortable just because if the baby's doing it, then it becomes obvious, oh, boy, that really is something that's missing, isn't it? But
right.
I've certainly had that case, whether they're popping out the words or doing the things you're asking them to do, and you're thinking, oh, you're showing up your brother and you're half his age.
Yeah. And it's not that you're a genius either. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. One other milestone that a child should reach by the time he's 21 months old is that he should understand at least 50 different words. That would be, again, having him evidence that by following some directions. One of the things in these 50 different words would be that he points to at least 6 different body parts. Again, that could be, you know, the standard eyes, nose, mouth, hair, toes, belly, fingers, knees, back. So many kids, I'll say, you know, do you have a boo-boo? And, you know, that's kind of, they know that word. That would be something they could do, too. But, again, that's by 21 months, and that's a pretty generous guideline. Typically developing children usually are doing those 6 body parts pretty darn well by 13, 14 months of age. So if you have a kid at 21 months that's not doing that, that's an issue for you. You need to really investigate that. One other thing that children can typically do by 21 months is point to at least a few objects or pictures on request, too. You know, you're looking at a magazine and you say, where's the baby? A child by 21 months should be able to take his little finger and put it right on the picture of the baby in the ad or whatever you're looking at. If you're looking at a picture book, you know, and it's one of his favorite things and you've read it over and over and over, he should be able to find 3 or 4 really familiar things. Where's the ball? Where's the truck? And point to those things when you ask that.
Laura, you point out, just put in here because I never really thought of it this way. You pointed out on your, I think it was Teach Me to Listen and Obey Part 1, when you start on body parts, if you have a child you're working with that doesn't seem to, you know, understand any of those, you work on things that are real far apart, like maybe the eyes and the toes or the belly.
Right.
Because a lot of parents do kind of do all those facial parts right away. And
right.
One thing, kids can't see them, so that
right.
makes it a little harder. They can't see them on themselves, whereas they can see their toes and they can see their bellies. And you also made the point of those are things that it's fun to tickle or to kiss. You know, I always do the belly thing, or at least I did with my kids, some of the kids I work with, but so that's a good, you know, just to remind parents that don't do all the nose, the mouth, the ears, the eyes. Start with maybe eyes, belly, and toes.
Right, because they're far apart, and you can tell where they're pointing. And don't you feel so bad when you when you're doing face body parts and you can tell the kid's working so hard, but boy, they never get their finger right on the right one. They're in the general direction. And so if you spread it out and work on ones that are far apart, they're more likely to get close. In Listen and Obey 1, one of my favorite little clients of all time is in there, and Kate, you work with her too, our sweet little Abby, and I don't think her mom would mind me talking about her, but she has a pretty significant diagnosis. But, boy, she has learned where her belly is, and her mom has really worked and worked and worked on her with that. And, you know, we play the little game on the DVD where I'm saying, where's your belly, where's your belly? And she's lying flat on her back, and, you know, she points to her belly, and then I tickle her. And it is so fun. Every time she finds it, I get so excited about that. But that's, again, one thing that her mom has really, really, really had to work on with her, and the thing that I think that's made Abby able to do that is because the reward of finding her belly has been, has made her overcome all of those little challenges. She has some motor challenges too, so it's kind of hard for her to always get her little hands where she wants them to be. So I wanted to point that out. That's one of my favorite scenes in all the DVDs that I've filmed.
Oh, she just giggles. Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah. It's pretty cute. Okay, let's move on. So my guidance between 21 and 24 months would be that children can follow two-step related verbal directions. That would be two things that make sense to be put together, like go get your book and bring to mommy so we can read, or get your shoes and sit down so we can put them on, you know, those, or get your cup and give it to me. Those would be those really simple two-step directions. And again, that's by the time a child turns two. And listen to this. By the time a child turns two, he should be understanding around 300 words. And I looked and looked and looked to verify that source, and I used the Denver Developmental Screening Scale for that number. Lots of different sources said that for typically developing children, when language is moving right along, understanding 300 words was about the, you know, kind of the middle bar there. And, boy, none of the kids that I would see, you know, because of the nature of language, like even the kids that I think, okay, receptively we've got some strengths here, a lot of those kids would be struggling to have 300 words that they understood.
And to determine whether or not they understand them in some fashion, way, shape, or form, they have to respond to them, right?
Right, okay. Right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Children at the 24 to 30-month level, that would be from 2 to 2.5, understand more complex words and can easily follow multiple-step unrelated directions. That would be like, put your book on the shelf and then go sit down because we're about to have dinner. Or something like, you know, go put your cup in the sink and then go on to the bathroom. We're going to take a bath right now. You know, with those two or three steps. Things. I'm not really giving any three-step. Those would be like two-step with a little clarifier on the end. But being able to sequence those two or three little directions in a row. When my children were 2.5, I really could give them lots of those things, and I would sometimes keep adding to think, how much can she do? How much can he do? How much can he remember? That was kind of a fun weirdo game that I used to play. That's the speech therapist in me there. Okay, another thing that kids 24 to 30 months should be able to do is to point to a larger variety of pictures on request, including those with actions and details. So that would be answering a question like looking at a book or looking at pictures and saying, show me who's sleeping, and a child would be able to find the person that's asleep out of kind of a group of pictures. Or let's find the window on the house, or show me the tail of the dog. It would be finding those details in pictures. And again, that's a big milestone between 24 and 30 months. And moving on to the big milestones between 30 and 36 months, and this would be 2.5 to 3, understanding how to answer questions accurately. So that would be by 3, responding to yes, no questions and not mixing that up. Responding to simple questions like where'd daddy go, responding to things like what do you want to eat, understanding things like what's your name, how old are you, you know, all those little questions that we like to ask our little friends. Other things would be understanding object functions. That would be which one goes on your feet, which one do you ride, show me what you use to drink from, what do you watch Elmo on, you know, understanding those things, how objects work. again, identifying parts of an object, that would be taking a pretty complex picture, or we already sort of talked about this, but even an object and, you know, pointing out specific little parts on that. Understanding gender differences, that would be asking him if you are a boy or a girl and him responding accurately to that. And understanding how to sequence events so that they begin to pretend that they're doing things beyond just like feeding babies and things. It would be doing something more complex, like going to the doctor, having a birthday party, going on a picnic, really all that nice advanced pretend play. And that comes in between 30 and 36 months. And then the big things between 36 months and 42 months would be understanding why events happen. That would be like the things that are on the preschool language scale 4. There's some pictures, and there's a picture of a sunny day, and then there's a picture of a rainy day, and then I think a picture of, I don't remember what the other picture is, but the question is, a little boy got his shoes wet when he was playing outside. What do you think it was like outside? It's being able to make that inference there that, oh, it had to be raining. That's why his shoes got wet. And, again, that's pretty complex, but that comes in between 3 and 3.5. Finding very specific details in pictures. We've already talked about that. That would be maybe like, show me the man who has a mustache. Show me the kitten that's not black. You know, understanding details like that. Understanding and following a whole string of commands, categorizing words, you know, show me all the things we eat, show me all the things that are clothes, show me all the ones that are animals, you know, understanding how objects can be alike and fit into categories, and then answering more complex questions like the why questions, how questions, those kinds of things. That would be what children can understand between 36 and 42 months. And that's some pretty, those are the pretty basic guidelines, and you can find more specific details about that on the website at teachmetotalk.com. And Kate, boy, we didn't get very far tonight, did we?
As usual.
Thought we could just do
it always well because our topics always kind of spill over into other things, and we had a caller, so that was great.
Yay.
That's a good reason to not get too far through this.
That was
that
great.
Was a good call and a good
and,
mommy and fun to
and I,
get to talk
yeah
to.
And I did want to talk about the milestones because I think it is important, because sometimes people don't even understand that there is a problem when you're talking about something that somebody maybe just be tuning in thinking, oh, my kid's just a late talker. I don't even know if this even applies to me. And so maybe by hearing some of those things, you know, they might think, oh, my child is 30 months, but, oh, he can't do that. She can't do that. So there might be more going on language-wise. I do think some speech pathologists are pretty good at identifying with parents the reason that a child is not talking is because he's not understanding. But I do think, unfortunately, that there are a number of therapists who miss that point themselves.
I kind of think so, too.
Yeah, and so they kind of give kids benefit of the doubt when sometimes what you need to be talking about in that first meeting and making goals for not is not necessarily how many words they're going to say or how they're going to communicate this stuff, but it's how a child understands. And without that foundational piece, they're not going to learn to talk, or even if they are just imitating those words and not really linking meaning with it, that's a real problem. So they're not going to be functional communicators anyway.
Right. And Laura, don't you see a lot of kids, I feel like I do, who kind of get to the, say they understand various objects have labels, but then that next bump up where they where we're hoping we're going to see them go to, say, find parts of the whole. You know, I know that
right.
Cat, but when you say, where's the kitty cat's tail, show me the kitty cat's nose, whatever, that's where they really start to struggle. I feel like that comes down to, ooh, we've got them to the label stage, which is big, but then when you really kind of bump that up and expect them to move beyond that, that's where you're just asking them to understand so much more that you begin to see, oh, this is a receptive problem.
Yeah, or that they really get the labels of nouns. They understand lots of names for things, but you start, you know, you say, get the duck, and then you say, let's make the duck drink the water, or let's just, you know, you don't say water, let's make the duck drink. They have no clue what you're talking about because they've gotten duck, 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 because they've heard it 5,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, they can't make that leap to go on to understand action words, or haven't you had kids before that you're sitting there playing with something and you say, let's put it in, and they have no clue what you're talking about. They've got the dog, and they're, you know, you're saying, put the dog in the barn, put it in, and they might have the dog, but they have no clue what you're saying beyond that. So that is kind of where the rubber meets the road for a lot of parents, and where they, you know, we get so excited about those first words that they have and that they're really labeling. And then sometimes 3 months into therapy, I'm having to really say to a mom, wait a minute, I'm glad he's talking too, but we've still got this whole vast array of things that he doesn't understand. And sometimes he might be saying things that he doesn't even get. We've got a little boy like that right now that really imitates a lot and will really pop those little words back out. But when you reverse the question and say, you get the duck. Where is the duck? And then it's sitting there with three or four other little animals. He really is lost, you know, and doesn't even make that connection. He can label it when we're holding it up or when he's imitating from us, but to find it on his own, and that's not, he's not even to the point where you've said where, you know, find the beak or find the eye. Oh, my gosh, I'll be happy if we're there in 6 months. But, you know, that's, again, sometimes parents really miss that because they think if they're popping out the words, surely they understand it. And that is what happens in typical language development, but not always with kids with language delays.
Right. And next week we should be able to get more moving on to what do you do when you're
right.
beginning to realize, okay, maybe he doesn't, he or she really doesn't understand what I assumed or thought he did. And you're... DVD shows that over and over, and I said after watching her first one, I'm a better therapist because I watched that. And I really have, even though I've been doing this a really long time, kind of modified and changed and enhanced some of the things that I did, but I didn't do as well as Laura does. So very helpful in actually seeing it if you watch the if you get the DVD. But we'll talk about it too because you're
yeah.
a master at what do you do?
Right, and I always feel like, gosh, you know, intervention is my thing. That's why I would never want to go to just a position where I evaluated children, because I do feel like, oh, gosh, almost anybody can point out a delay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's being able to know what to do to make that better and how to work on it that's sometimes the tricky part. And, you know, the DVDs honestly helped me be better at what I do, because then you really do have to break down what is it, what really works for kids, what is going to be the most, what are the 10 most helpful things that I can convey on this DVD to help parents know how to do this at home, to help new therapists know how to make this happen for a little client they might be struggling with, or to help even us old seasoned pros just continue to get better and better and better. So the DVDs have been very educational for me as well, because it does really make you kind of hone your skills and think, how do I break this down? What am I really doing here? What's the simplest way that I can say this and show it so that parents and other people can see it? So
and
thank
when,
you for
when
saying
we,
that.
When we say work on it, we really mean play on it, because when
yeah.
we're talking about when we're talking about 0 to 3 year olds or even kids, you know, 4 or 5
schoolers, yeah.
If you make it look like work, they're done. So it's
yeah.
you know, you're targeting it and you're feeling like you're working on it, but really the child's going to feel like he's playing and subconsciously will be picking up the things that we want them to pick up. But it better be playful, because if it feels like work, they're running in the other room.
Yeah, and I ban parents from saying that. When parents start
yeah.
saying, it's time
to
work,
do your work,
it's time to work. I say, oh, my gosh, don't ever say that again when I'm here. Don't you dare call this work. You need to say, it's time to play. Laura's here. Come on. We're going to play.
It's
going to
be fun. Which,
yeah.
I mean, if it isn't, it's probably not. Anyway, I just wanted to say, parents, don't think it's you're going to get a worksheet on how to find the details and pictures, because good luck
yeah.
trying to get any 2-year-old or even 3-year-old interested in that.
Or 42-year-old interested
yeah.
in that. I don't even want to sit down and do it that way. So you've got to make it fun. And next week we're not going to talk about any of the background. We're just going to go straight to techniques that you can actually use at home. And I promise these things work because, lo and behold, we do it every day and have some pretty good outcomes with kids.
Yes.
All right. Well, all right. That's all for tonight.
Okay.
Join us next Thursday night. All right.
Have a
bye.
Great to your mom.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.